Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Shadows Over the Cinema. This is our monthly Patreon bonus content where we sit around and we review old movies. Some old, some new so far. This one's another old one. And we are just going to talk about it, what we think of it, and especially its application to L5R and other role-playing games. With me is my usual cast of characters. Why don't the Shadow of the Cabal crew go around and introduce themselves?
Good morning, this is Dakota.
It's not morning anymore, and I'm Justin.
Still morning for me, and I'm Ryan.
And we have a special guest today, someone who decided to take the long journey all the way from London, all the way to your living room. Calome from The Releasts. How's it going today?
Hello, everyone. Things are great. The weather is very nice here in London.
Awesome. Am I pronouncing your name right, by the way?
Yeah, it's fine.
Close enough. Okay. we appreciate your forgiveness in that.
But it's not French or anything. It's a Gaelic name I picked up for role-playing games a long time ago. So I probably don't pronounce it correctly myself.
Gotcha. In America, we're all monolingual anyway, so we do our best. Not really.
Do we?
We say we do.
Some people do.
Yeah.
It's cute that you think that you are all monolingual while the majority of people would speak Spanish and English. You still think you are the majority, which is not the case.
Yeah. Hey, okay. This isn't a roast.
You just got burned.
I did get burned. We're here to have a good time. We're going to talk about a movie that we all watched called Kuroneko from 1968. And before we get into that and sort of our thoughts and the plot of it and everything like that, I'm just going to put two disclaimers, two warnings in here. One, this isn't a regular episode of Shadow of the Cabal. We're probably going to use strong language. So if you got kids in the room, shoo them out. Second, Kuroneko specifically is a movie with a large theme and focus on sexual violence and sexual content. And we're going to do our best to talk about that respectfully and everything like that. But it is something that we're going to talk about and address. So just fair warning, sexual violence and the talk of it will be a feature of this episode. Now that we get all that serious stuff out of the way, why don't we just go around the horn and we can just talk about, basically give me like your one sentence review of the movie, sort of your basic general impressions and what you thought of it. So if Calome, if you would like to start us off as our guest.
So my one sentence would be, what goes around comes around.
fair. Did you generally have a positive impression of the movie, or what'd you think of it?
I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed how the sobriety of the movie. I was rewatching it a few minutes ago to spend time. And I mean, just the introduction, it's establishing shot still with characters coming to a place. There's very a sense of dread about what's going to happen. But it's just a still shot of samurai walking through a grove, but that works so well, and the whole movie is like that. There's not that many big visual effects. It's extremely sober but extremely, extremely efficient. So I really did enjoy that. And beside that, I did not expect the introduction to be as hard. But I think it serves the movie really. It's not sugarcoating what sexual assault in a time of war has been and still is today. And on one hand, it's a difficult topic. On the other hand, it's very interesting the way it's presented.
I totally agree. Awesome, Ryan. What about you? What's your short review of it?
Not enough cats.
Not enough cats. There's quite a few.
There's one cat, and it shows up like maybe four times. Cat.
What'd you think of the movie?
it was a good movie. It's I don't know. While I enjoyed it, I don't know that it's a movie that the general population would like. It is kind of slow. and as Colm said, kind of somber. Mm-hmm. So it lacks a lot of the action and the flash that might draw a lot of people into most movies. It's definitely not a modern horror movie.
I'll agree with that.
Stretch of the imagination.
For sure. Dakota.
I think overall it was a good film, despite, you know, the atrocities that occur in it. But I actually wouldn't consider it a horror film. It was more of a tragedy in my eyes.
Yeah.
It's very classic. But, almost Shakespearean. I mean,
almost mythological, really, it feels like to me. Like, it feels like something, the type of story that is older than what was written down, you know?
Well, I'm pretty sure it was based on an older story, wasn't it?
I believe so. I didn't do a ton of research on this one, but I think I do remember reading that it was based on some old folktale. Yeah, I agree with that, Dakota. I'm excited to get into that. Justin, what about you?
Yeah, I enjoyed it, and pretty much everybody touched on everything I kind of felt about it already.
Cool. I like this movie a lot. This is my second time watching it, and while I agree with people that it's sort of a dreadful movie, not in the sense that it's bad, but in the sense that bad things happen in it and it's spooky, a lot of the scary stuff kind of came across to me as a little bit hokier this time, but that is just so divorced. That's like how it was presented. The content is very, very sobering. Yeah, so now that we got that out of the way, because there's five of us here today, we've got a packed house at Shadow of the Cabal Studios, and so we don't talk over each other, I'm just going to briefly go through the plot synopsis of the movie just so we can get that out of the way, and then we can sort of get into the meat of the conversation, which is specific topics that we liked or didn't like or thought was worth bringing up. So the movie starts with two women, a mother and her daughter, who are in a small house in a bamboo grove, and a group of samurai on the warpath come through the area. They drink the water, they steal their food, and they rape the two women who are in the house. It's kind of unclear how it happens, but a fire starts at some point, and the house goes up in flames, but the two charred bodies of the women are there, and a black cat appears and licks up at their bodies and at their wounds and stuff. From there, it smash cuts to this huge gatehouse where a series of samurai are parading through, and these two women, the mother and the daughter, return as ghosts and appear as like nice, noble women. And basically, one by one, they lure these samurai to their homes. They seduce the samurai with sake and alcohol and other niceties. The daughter ends up having sex with most of them, and then she inevitably tears their throat out or claws them to death. And you go through a series of those happening. I think it happens like three or four times until you get sort of the pattern of what's going on here. From there, the movie sort of smash cuts to a warrior who is fighting in some war up in the north of Japan. He's a scrappy young kid, and he gets lucky and he kills a general and takes his head, and he brings his head back to the governor, Raiko, and he says to the governor, "Look, I killed this guy." And the governor gives him the new samurai name of Gintoki, and he's made a samurai in acknowledgement of what he did. And his first job, this governor Raiko sends Gintoki to explore and figure out who's killing these samurai near the gatehouse and what's going on there. Gintoki, of course, goes and he encounters the women, and you kind of put together pretty quickly that Gintoki was the samurai. He was married to the daughter, and that is his mother who died. And they were separated at war when Gintoki went off to war. And that is when the tragedy and the burning and the rape happened. And he's come back, and he like kind of half recognizes them, but he's he appears to be very sort of doubting of himself the whole time. So he spends time with them. He knows he's set to kill them. He sleeps with his wife, or the ghost of her, rather, for 7 days, and she basically breaks the pact that she made with the Lord of Hell to be able to stay and to drink the blood of samurai, so to speak, and she breaks that by spending time with him, and she gets dragged to hell. And yeah, so she breaks...
It's done as a pact of love, basically.
Right, right. She chooses to love him again for 7 nights, knowing full well that that means that she will be sent to hell for eternity. And so Gintoki goes back to Raiko, the warlord, and says, yep, I got rid of one of them. And the Raiko is like, okay, go take care of the other one. So now he's left with his mother. And he encounters her again. He goes back to the home, but he sees her reflection in a puddle of water as a yokai, a ghost cat, basically. And they get into a big fight, and he cuts her arm off, which then turns and takes the appearance of a big furry cat's paw. And she flees. He brings that back to the warlord and says, hey, look, I killed it. Here's its arm as proof. And the warlord says, okay, you're going to go through 7 days of ritual purification. We're going to lock you in this room with your sword and the cat's paw. And you are to pray until you are spiritually clean again. The ghost of his mother comes back pretending to be a diviner, because she is trying to get her paw back. She tricks him. She breaks in. She gets her paw back. She jumps around and he tries to fight her off. And then eventually he sort of stumbles and wakes up, and he is in the burned out shell of his home where his mother and wife were raped, and the snow falls on them. And then the movie ends. Is that basically the gist of it? Is there anything else big on this?
Yeah, that's the gist.
More or less.
Yeah. It's got a really weird ending. It just kind of ends. It's very sort of fairy tale-ish. But that is the basic plot synopsis. And now we can, if you guys want, we can get into more detailed talk. I have talked enough. So Ryan, why don't you start us off and talk about, stuff that you liked or thought was noteworthy of the movie, or stuff that you really didn't like?
I mean, I'll start off by saying, and I think it's been kind of covered before, that while, you know, yeah, definitely horror movie might not be quite the right term for it, but I think it was, at the time, it was meant to be a bit uncomfortable, at least. And for me, in at least modern times, really only the beginning scene is the thing that really made me uncomfortable. The rest of it was... It was a good story, but it kind of felt like a campy, like...
I'll agree. It treads the line between being campy and very serious, and right. I think what you're trying to get across is that that's just because it's a product of being a 60s horror movie.
Right. One thing that I think maybe the movie would be, well, I'm positive the movie would be differently received for audiences from Japan, because I believe that head samurai, whose name I'm drawing a blank on,
Raiko.
I think he is actually a historic figure.
I believe that's correct. I think he was a real dude.
Right. Yeah. And so, like, things like that, I think, make this movie very different for those of us who have surprisingly little knowledge of Japanese history.
We know a lot about pretend Japan.
Oh, well, we know way more about pretend Japan than we will ever know about real Japan.
Yeah.
But, like, I feel like this movie might be different if you knew the historical basis behind it.
To draw a parallel, I guess it would be a bit like, I don't know, saying that George Washington was the head of a band of thugs who would be violent to a different group of people, and suddenly you got a movie which is not exactly about that, but takes the character and develops on it, obviously George Washington is a much more recent figure, so
yeah. Right, I get what you're saying. It takes a real historical figure and then puts them in a fictional situation or a fictional backdrop, and we don't really have, as Western audiences, the five of us here, we don't really have the weight of that, like,
that
historical
knowledge.
Right,
right. Well, right.
Yeah, actually, I'm even saying George Washington, but I'm actually quite probably very wrong, because I'm thinking George Washington was the first person to pop to my mind, but it's it's a rather positive figure of history. I have no clue whether or not that character of Raiko in Japanese history is considered as someone very like bad or very good in history through his deeds.
Yeah.
Right. Well, because he seems like he was kind of portrayed as a bad... Like, he was definitely a bad guy in this movie. He outright, you know, the peasants that die are weak and blah, blah, blah. Like, he was definitely a bad guy here.
Well, he's like the best Kolot villain.
Yeah, when I saw that, I figured Tanner was like, oh, this is why Tanner likes this movie.
Yep. You know, samurai are bad people. Character.
There's something quite interesting because even as an audience, it's a bit difficult. There's the Jintoki, the one who's kind of a very, very low class peasant, not even a ronin, and becomes a samurai through his deeds. And you have difficulties recognizing that character before and after is a complete makeup for the new style. No, I don't have my bushy hairy hair. I've got my nice look of samurai. Regarding Reiko, I'm not even sure. I think he was leading the group of rapists in the beginning, wasn't he?
Oh, interesting.
I think I didn't. So I think
I don't know if I put that together. I know that one of the samurai that she preyed on.
Several of them.
Yeah, one or two of them. She definitely asked him, like, oh, you were at war. How long ago were you at war? And he was like, 3 years. And then she murdered him. So I thought there was a connection. I mean, in the beginning scene, you really don't see close-ups of too many of the guys.
Except that one guy who's eating.
Oh, God. What a creepazoid. God. Yeah, that part is so unsettling. Like, it's gross. But yeah, I never put that together. If Raiko, I mean, I believe that he was the dude in charge of those guys, but I don't know if he was one of them.
Well,
I don't think he was there.
They say, surely I shouldn't have to worry about a samurai who's serving Raiko. So the first person they kill, they know that samurai is serving Raiko. But then later on, they say both the ghosts say that they don't care whether or not the samurais were the ones who killed them.
Yeah,
right.
They're just having vengeance against all samurais. And it's quite interesting also to see peasants. There's not a peasant character. And they kind of like, you know, samurais, nobles, the court, there's war. It's bad for me. I don't know who is who. If they don't attack me, I'm happy. If they do, it's terrible for me. But it's interesting also this level of a bit like Legend of the Five Rings, where you would have the Aemon who would care probably not at all whether this noble, whether their master is a scorpion or a crane and this sort of things.
Right.
If I can, Dan.
Yeah, go ahead.
One of the good points of this movie, I think, was highlighted in the recent edition of L5R, the fifth edition beta, the concept of duty versus, Giri versus
Ninjo. Yeah.
Yeah. What a person wants and what a person is instructed to do. You have this reflected in the main character. You know, it's vanquish these monsters for me, but the personal drive is that he's a peasant and these people are, you know, obviously his family, so he has conflicting feelings regarding the matter because, you know, it is his wife, it is his mother. So it's a very good, like, moment, I feel, as far as things are concerned with the Gintoki, or however it's pronounced.
Yeah. I think it's interesting to highlight that there was a good... This is a good example of how Legend of the Five Rings is not Japan, because in Japan, historically, there was some social mobility. Like, if you were a peasant and you were conscripted and you killed somebody important, guess what? You're a samurai now. You know, like, in L5R, that wouldn't be something...
It can happen,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, it does happen from time to time. It's not very common, though.
Right, but it's not something that would be celebrated or anything. And,
right.
Like, and
you'd be looked down on. The samurai that came from peasants that is kind
right,
of looked
right.
down on.
And I love that sequence of the transformation of him as the women are, like, bathing him and stuff, and he's being pampered and, like, shaved and cleaned up. He looks completely, like, unrecognizable from before and after.
Justin, is there anything else? Is there anything you'd want to hop in and talk about? As far as stuff that you
like, I actually enjoy like the pace of the movie. Everything flowed really nicely. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of sex in the middle of it. Like the whole middle act is a lot of just like
yeah.
It's just a horny movie.
It's a horny movie. No, oh,
come on. I mean, classy.
It is classy. It's pretty classy.
The nudity was behind a veil. Real classy, you guys.
Yeah. I agree with the pacing point. I love how much the first act jumps around. Like, it's the rape and murder, and then suddenly these samurai getting murdered, and then suddenly this other guy and his transformation from a peasant into a samurai. I love that it lays down all these pieces and then works to throw them together.
I really like the slow reveal, and at the same time, I'd like to react to the description of the movie as camp. Personally, I find it's very, I don't know if it's the right word, theatrical. It's really like watching a play. Things are
thematic.
Cheap. Yeah. It's, I don't like the word cheap, but again, sober,
low budget but effective. Yeah. Well, the way that they,
and the slow reveal of the condition of the ghost, the little things are really nice. Really, like, it starts with atmosphere, the fog, the lighting. You see the them just dressed all in white, which is a color of death in Japan, right, as far as I know. Lit very heavily at night, or I think maybe it's in French we call that Nuit Américaine, so it's American night. I don't know. It's filmed during the day, but with
right, it's film filter. Night where they just they shoot it during the daytime, but they just shoot a blue filter on it. There's lots of old like every Western movie you watch has that, where it's like, oh, these guys are wearing sunglasses outside at nighttime.
But I really like the things which again. Which in Legend of the Five Ring games, you could take as the clue you give to your players, little things like there's a puddle of water and she jumps above it. And for a lady, she's very nimble when she does that. It's very eerie. And then you've got at some point hair, which will move, just a flock of hair, which will move like the tail of a cat. And later on, you've got some reflections and postures, which are,
I think they don't make any sounds when they move either. Yeah. Like the movements are basically muted. There's no sound when they walk.
And do you think that that's a cat thing or a ghost thing?
I think that's both.
Okay.
clearly, you haven't had cats.
Yeah, Ryan's cats are noisy as hell.
Yeah,
Ryan, you put bells on your cats, so you know they're coming.
No, I put bells on my cats to shame them because they are cats and they should feel shame. Anyway, the other thing that I was going to say is not only that, but the first time we see the girl as a ghost, when she's moving, they're doing that effect where she's clearly not walking. She's floating, you know.
Oh, that is the creepiest part of the movie. There's a part right at the end, too, when he's fighting her in the purification chamber. And she, like, ducks under his sword strike and then just, like, and slides. Yeah, like it's such a good cheat to make something scary by giving them unnatural movement that no creature can do, and it's such a good cheat code for making that appear supernatural, and like it's genuinely alarming even today. Like when I watched it, I was like, oh shit, like that would, I don't know, that'd freak me the hell out. Going back a little bit, just I want to address Colomb's point about the lighting there. When you're talking about it being theatrical, there are just like some straight up spotlight effects and stuff going on, and I
really like those.
Yeah, it really
spotlight effects too.
If I had to guess, I'm no expert, but I think they're really trying to evoke kabuki theater in that.
She's dancing around a lot too.
Right. I kind of interpreted that as like her like doing a spell or something. I don't know if it's ambiguous. But yeah, I really loved the lighting and the fog and stuff. It feels like a very good theatrical production. I'll agree with that. I just wanted to highlight that.
I really loved watching it again, and there's a moment I thought this is Legend of the Five Rings for me. I really enjoyed when what's his name, Raiko, so the important samurai. Yeah. You've got this scene where he's facing who I assume to be the emperor, who is very still, very calm, and just saying, look, this is happening. it's scaring me, and I need you to do something about that. And this whole scene, you've got Raiko on his knees and sweating. There's a the first thing you see of the scene is literally a little puddle of sweat on the floor, and you don't know what it is. And then you see Raiko, and he's bended on his knee, sweating, while the Emperor is, I need you to do something about that. Otherwise, I'd be happy. And the next scene, Raiko is being changed and being outlandish, like, I hate the Emperor. He's not a real master here. I need this sorted. But
and don't tell anybody I said this,
right,
please.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that part. I love the... Raiko's a goon. He's a treasure.
And again, Jintoki, the fight. It's almost like you got little pieces of different movies which come together as part of this one. The real life, what is going on versus the fantasy story. And Jintoki, the peasant, winning this fight. And then another thing, very Legend of the Five Rings. So he performed a martial feat through by luck, you're not sure, through this big fighter. He managed to and the guy's got a Tetsubo, and he's got an Odashi, and he managed to kill him. And then he's facing Raiko, and it's like, you accomplished a martial feat. Or about you tell me you tell the story to my court now. Let's see if you turn that feat into glory points. It's 3D.
Right. There's definitely a lot of parallels, like a lot of moments that I'm like, this could just happen at the table.
And then you get the courtier like, oh.
Yeah, I love the courtier ladies.
I also love the what I've seen a lot in L5R is, oh, you did something good. Well, now your next job is something completely unrelated to that I have no idea if you have any ability to do, but you have to do this.
He said, I was the last survivor of this great battle, and I managed by sheer luck to behead this giant. And he's like, okay, let me give you a fucking Witcher quest to exercise these two ghosts.
So you can clearly kill ghosts, right?
Right, ghosts, no problem. God, it's good. Before we drift too far into L5R talk, is there anything just about the movie that you guys want to call attention to? I have a couple things that I still want to talk about.
I found myself in that very end when his mother was his mother ghost. I don't know if there's a term for mother ghost. When she was trying to get into the temple area.
Yeah, I was like, come on, dude.
Yeah, it was like, dude, you know damn well. Like, clearly the 7-day ritual thing is well known and well respected. The Emperor's seer is not going to interrupt this, man.
Oh, but it's
that was the most like fairy
religion.
Tale.
That's a different religion. I work for the Emperor, but I'm the other religion part.
Yeah,
of the
I noticed
so
that too.
It's the old
a different god.
It's brilliant.
I love that part. I loved it, but
I also found myself like just, dude, you're an idiot. Come on.
It was cool.
My one thing for like the first part of Gintoki talking with the ghosts and stuff was like, just talk to him. Why don't you just tell him what your plan is and he'll probably help you. And then they're like, no, we made a deal. We can't do that. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool.
They explained it, one thing I like, and this is definitely a cheap horror thing, but it's one that's always effective on me, at least I'll say, is when they show you something and then a character looks at it and it cuts to a different horrific thing and then they look back and it's normal again. That happens a couple times when I think like the first time she hands him a cup. The first time she hands him a cup of sake, I believe, like her arm is like a big hairy Italian guy's arm for a second and then it goes back. And then it happens again at the puddle right at the end. I think it's kind of where he reveals the fact that she is a spirit, though, so maybe that one doesn't count. But just that the old horror double take is like, so they use it several times in this movie and I think it's good every time.
Would agree with
one that. Thing that confused me about that water scene was like, he already knew that she was a ghost. He already knew completely, and she had invited him back to with the whole like, oh, come back and say one thing and then I'll leave because you know I'm a ghost. I don't understand why seeing a reflection of, yep, she's a ghost, all of a sudden, oh, wait a second, I should kill her.
If I could be... Yeah, go ahead.
I find it's kind of a case of, to quote another show, it's kind of a Buffy the Vampire Slayer type of situation, in the sense of, like the vampires in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, at the beginning it's very clear that vampires are not the people you knew who are turned into something immortal. It's something replacing them. And then as you go along the way, this question is not as clear anymore. And right. I think when I was watching it, I was doubting, and my assumption was that the character himself was doubting whether, wait a minute, is that the ghost of my mother, or is it something which took her appearance, or is it something in between which is not quite my mother anymore? And when I saw that reflection, I was like, yeah, no, it's not her spirit. It's now it's something, it's a kind of Oni or something. It's not her anymore.
But right. If I could be completely pretentious for a moment, the word that they use is yokai, and that's the word that they use for them every time.
Yes.
And sometimes when they say it in the speech, they translate it as ghost. Sometimes they translate it as monster. And sometimes I think at the end, like, he calls her a specter or something,
right,
which is just like a really yokai. Mean. Right. And I think that that just is sort of might be something that's kind of lost in translation, of the difference between a spirit, a ghost, and a yokai, which are all different things, I'm pretty sure, in Japanese.
I thought yokai were going into watches.
God, no, yeah. We're done. Get out.
We're done. Lord.
Yeah. But the reason that this is still,
I think it was actually should have been translated as Digimon.
Yeah.
I think is what they all were.
Yeah. Digital monsters.
But my point is the reason that this is still confusing to me is clearly there were two of them, and clearly the one that was at one point his wife was still enough of his wife to want to be willing to spend a week with him and destroy herself. So the idea that, this one who has told him it's willing to destroy itself as well is not like he just sees, oh wait, it's a thing that I knew it was, I better kill it. That's what
I
is
think,
weird to me.
I think it is with his wife, it is the power of love that like transcends.
Oh, so he doesn't love his
desire
mom.
For
I
vengeance.
Get it. Okay.
Just to be clear, it's ambiguous a couple times, but she is his mother,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Not his wife's mother.
That is his mother and his
right.
wife. So that is that you said at the beginning a mom and a daughter. It's actually a mom and a daughter-in-law.
Right, but they don't really make that distinction, I think, in the movie. At least
they don't.
Subtitles, they don't.
The way I read it is they were using mother and daughter as a plan or a play to lure.
Oh, that's what the story that they were telling. Yeah. Okay. Fair play.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Anything else that you guys want to bring up before we move on?
Sort of a finishing note. I thought what was interesting. We're just having this conversation. We're like, oh, what is it actually happening, etc. It's quite nice that it remains rather ambiguous in the end. What's happening? Mm-hmm. Is the mother really willing to kill her son not to go to hell? Is she still the mother, or is she changed? Again, same with the wife / daughter-in-law. And the interesting thing, I think it would be a movie today, a Western movie, you know, there would be a reckoning to everyone. And here
right.
it's sort of like it ends and most of things are open-ended.
Yeah.
I don't, mm-hmm. they didn't take vengeance on all the samurais who killed them. The son who's kind of somewhat innocent in a way. Well, meets a difficult end. The master, I keep forgetting his name.
Raiko
doesn't have any comeuppance. So it's funny that all of that is sort of, well, everybody in the end had a very bad deal. So samurais died,
right.
people suffered, and the ghosts themselves, they ended up in hell or whatever. And I'm not even sure if the mother survives.
Yeah, I don't think the mother ended up in hell. I mean, she got her arm back and she got away. Clearly, that's opening up for a sequel.
Yeah, a lot. Yeah, who's going to fund it? It's coming 2019.
I think
it's interesting that she does just get away with the arm. I don't know if she could have killed him there, because it seemed very much like the altar had been consecrated and she couldn't get her own arm. She had to trick him into bringing it to her. So I'm wondering if maybe she would have killed him if she had the chance to, but maybe there was some holy power there that was keeping her at bay. I don't know.
One thing about that that I found interesting was before she switched gears and was like, oh no, I'm a seer. She was talking as the mother like 5 minutes before the seer thing. And she said that she couldn't get in there because of the sword. Not because of the altar. She said the sword.
Huh.
Yeah, I really like that.
Which I don't know if maybe there's something about it being, you know, that there's a lot of vagueness to that whole thing, but it might not have been the altar. It might have been, this is her son's sword or something, and blah, blah, blah.
Everybody knows katanas have special powers.
Oh, they absolutely do. Katanas can kill ghosts in L5R. That is canonical.
In our game, it is canonical. Yeah, in real life, too, they can kill ghosts. Okay, so just a final wrap-up question. Did you guys find this movie to be effectively horrific or dreadful or spooky or however you want to... Like, did it wig you out at all?
Not horrific, but I really enjoyed it. It's it made me think a lot again, like we just did. Oh wait, what's actually happening? Is it that? Oh, I got this bit of information which explained why this was happening earlier. So I find it's quite rewarding in the way it was telling the story. So it's more of a mystery and. It's like playing Project Zero Fatal Frame. Project Zero Fatal Frame is really scary. This movie is not scary. I really liked it, but it's not a horror movie.
Yeah.
I felt like there was a lot of dread in the background, but it wasn't very scary.
You weren't feeling it yourself so much.
Yeah.
The real horror is... the real people in that movie.
Absolutely.
The real horror, we said it several times, is the opening sequence, which is really one of the worst scenes I've seen in a movie. It's shot on one hand. It shows a lot without showing anything. It's very hard. It's, I guess, as tasteful as you could describe this at the sense of it's not sugarcoating anything, but that's the horrific bit, and that's a bit which is in our real world.
Mm-hmm. Dakota, what do you feel? How do you feel about how spooky this movie is? The spooky kabuki movie.
You guys led me to believe this was a horror film. Like you said, don't look up anything about it. It's a horror film. Just watch it.
Are you glad I did? I told you not to look up anything about it, though.
I don't really think it would have made a difference. It was an enjoyable film as far as like the story and things like that go, but I wasn't horrified or scared. It gave me a story idea for L5R, but other than that, I wasn't terrified.
I like to lump this movie in my mind. I don't like much horror stuff, and whether or not you're scared by it, I think large parts of this movie are intended to be a horror movie. I think we can all agree on that. I find this to be in the same camp of the other horror movies I like, which are like Alien or The Thing, where it's more of like a thinking man's
existential.
Well, not existential necessarily, but it's more like it's a thought-provoking horror movie, and the horror isn't there to just make you go, it's there to make you go like, what the hell's going on here?
And that creeping dread of like, oh God, what's happening? What's going
to
happen next?
Right. And just trying to piece it together in your mind and figure it out. It gives me more vibes of like The Thing as opposed to like Fatal Frame or something like that, you know? Anything else anyone wants to say on that before we move on?
It makes me hopeful that when I get murdered, one of my cats will bring me back as a yokai.
To drink the blood of samurai, and then you
notice he said when, not
Yeah. Oh, no, I know what my life's about.
Yeah, you know what you got coming. Lord.
Just a quick note. We were chatting earlier and I asked you the name of the director. Apparently, it's Kaneto Chindo. I didn't knew it, but I already seen a movie by him, which I really enjoyed. One of these late night movie you catch on a German or French channel called Arte, if you have any continental listener. And that movie is called Oni Baba. And I really recommend it. And it's got quite a number of similarities with Kurenoko, because again, that's the story of a mother and her daughter-in-law living in a shed, just like at the beginning of this one. But they, from the start, they are the one killing samurai. So they're not killing samurai as ghosts. They entrap samurai to steal their stuff and survive like that. And it's a very good movie also. Onibaba, I really recommend it.
Yeah, we'll have to put that on the list maybe of stuff we want to get to. Yeah, I was looking right before we started recording as other movies directed by this guy. He seemed to have directed a lot of like sort of 60s and 70s like exploitation movies and like gory over-the-top weird sex stuff from what I could just gather by scanning through this. I haven't seen any of them, so I won't render judgment. But if they sound like what they're about, this movie feels very different to what he's got the rest of the stuff sounds like.
He's got a writing credit from 2009, which seems extremely exciting. It's called Achi, and it's a movie featuring Richard Gere and a dog.
Oh boy!
Oh, the Shiba where that goes back to the subway station all the time.
I don't know what this thing.
Oh, I was like, yeah.
2009. Oh, he's still active. Yeah. He wrote a movie about a dog and Richard Gere.
Yeah, that's based on a true story.
I just looked it up, and he apparently has a directing credit from 2011. So he's still going, man.
I think he died in like 2012.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, so I guess
he died at 100 years old. Good for him. Yeah.
And no, my Japan. Richard Gere movie is done. I can pass away.
That. We need more.
I will come back to drink
movies.
The blood of Richard Gere.
I think you need to make a Patreon goal of reviewing that movie.
Yeah, Hachi. I mean, it's on brand. It's on brand for Kitsuki and his dog. Dakota's nodding. You can't see it.
We're getting there.
Yeah, so, Kalum, now as we sort of transition to talking about applications to RPGs, there was specifically a couple of topics that you wanted to bring up, specifically on how to apply sensitive content, like what is in this movie, to role-playing games and how to do that safely.
Yeah, I'm looking at my note, but I lost them. Well, the thing is, turns out it's very random, but pretty much on the day I watched that movie, I listened to an episode of Panda's Talking Games with Senda from the RPG Academy and Phil Vecchione, and the subject was edge play, and that's pretty much the first scene of this movie. So edge play, it's how you can agree or not with your players to cover certain difficult topics. So I guess the three main things which are part of that would be the veil, agreeing things which can happen behind the veil, the line, things you don't accept, you agree with your players that they shouldn't accept in any form in the game, and then you got the X card, which is one of the device you can use during a play for people to signal that something makes them uncomfortable. So to take the example of this movie, a veil would be, you would play a game of Legend of the Five Rings, pretty much with the same premise of this one. And you would say, well, a sexual aggression took place at some moment in the past. So you know that this happened. You don't watch it happening in the game. It's not described in details by the game master, but it happened. It's behind the veil. And then
It's an off-screen presence that is a theme that will be
recurring, but you're not specifically trying to evoke imagery or tell the story of the sensitive topic happening.
Exactly. Correct? So that's the sort of things which players might agree. They might agree that, okay, we don't want to have a scene involving this kind of violence or other things, but we agree that it's part of the story somehow. So if right. then people wouldn't agree to that, they would say, we draw a line and we don't want any kind of this taking place. So that's the difference between the veil and the line, which I find are very interesting concept and are quite important when we're talking about a movie like the one we just watched.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think that L5R, it lends itself to stories that have sensitive content and things like that. I think that the books are very political in not addressing any of that stuff. Rightfully, I think. Right. But I mean, L5R is fundamentally a setting about war, constant war. And in every single armed conflict in human history, there like rape happens. And like there are things, sexual violence is perpetrated by one side or another or both, and it's something that's just part of that setting. And I think if you want to tell an honest account of war, you know, you might want to sit down with your players ahead of time and say, hey, are we going to say, you know, like if this is something that's going to be an element of the adventure I'm trying to tell, are you guys cool with that? Is there a hard line where you're just like, nope, I don't want any of that. This is a recreational activity for me. I don't want to think about heavy stuff like that. Or is that something that your players are saying, yeah, it's okay if we all assume that it's happening somewhere, but we don't want it to happen at the table? Or is it something that you all consent to and say, yeah, this is something that's happening and we want to address it at the table and explore that topic in a safe place where we all agree that that's a thing that we're cool with happening?
And here we're talking about sexual violence specifically, but my last game of Legends of the Five Rings, we happened to arrive to a village which had been burned down. So there were the corpses of villagers there. So and the game master just asked, is that okay if I describe that, because it's part of the story. So no sexual violence, but the simple description right. of a village burned down, everybody in the village, men, women, and children, is another example of something which could be accepted or not by player. And it's fine. And it's also a question of, skills by the game master. Right. Some game master might be skilled and resourceful enough to properly tell this kind of story, and some others not. But
And I think the third one of those, the X card, is a really good topic for, you know, let's be honest, not every game master will know that something is possibly a factor, something, you know, you're never going to know every single thing that will upset your players. So
yeah, it's a simple way to identify right. For someone to signal that they are being triggered by mm-hmm. something being told. Maybe one of you could explain what the X card actually is and how it works.
Yeah, so the X card is in like, if you're playing in real life, normally what people would do is they would take a like an index card and they would just write an X on it and put it in the middle of the table. In if you're playing online, like what we do for Shadow of the Cabal, it's more of just a verbal agreement among the people that if somebody is uncomfortable, they will type an X and send it in. And the reason that it's there is if something comes up that makes somebody really uncomfortable, that somebody does not want included in the game, or at least spoken, you know, talked about, the understanding is that you touch the X card, you type X and send it, something agreed upon by everyone, and it's just the scene ends with that. That you don't,
or you drop it and you retcon right, what happens. Right.
You drop it, you do something, but that specific scene, we're done there, we're not continuing that line because somebody's right. uncomfortable.
And we haven't ever, I'll just speak frankly, amongst our group for Shadow of the Cabal, we haven't really implemented anything formally like that. There have been things that have come up in play where one of us has said, hey, I'm not really, if this is where this is going, I'm not really
cool with that and we've addressed it in play, or, and obviously we edit that part out and just go along with the main story of it. But it is something that I think as a game master, I could be better at doing and implementing. And especially I'm going to be running games for the first time at a Catacon, at a convention. And these guys have all played through my adventure. So I'll just say a very brief thing. There is imagery of domestic abuse in the adventure that I'm running. And that's something that until Colombe sent me that podcast to listen to, I didn't really... It's not something that I thought was going to be an issue or I didn't address as an issue, but now it is something that I'm going to take into account. And when I sit down at the table, I'm going to say, hey, this adventure that I'm having has some very light imagery evoking domestic abuse. And is that something that we're cool with? If anybody says, no, I'm not cool with it, that's fine. I have a backup way to get that clue to you. But, you know, it's just about consenting to the types of content you're going to have.
Right.
I think
a lot of game master, I'm in the same situation as you are before listening to that show. I heard about it, but I never implemented this sort of things. And in part because I was playing with people I was used to. And first, right. I had a certain knowledge of what they feel about different topics. And second, it's all about making your table feel safe and open to discuss if something shows up. And of course, if you are very familiar with people, hopefully they should feel confident without the X card, without the device, to just raise their hand and talk about it. But of course, when you're playing with people you've played less, you know, for mm-hmm. not as many much time, etc. Also, the thing doesn't have to be very obvious thing like domestic violence or whatever. Maybe it's something which just triggers a person for a personal reason. It can be something like a phobia or anything. But it's just an helping tool, which sometimes I hear people are a bit protective, reactive towards that. I think it doesn't hurt, and sometimes right. you might be surprised that you did not realize that you might have hurt the feelings of someone.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think L5R is especially a minefield with that, because one of the core themes of it is you're not doing good enough, kill yourself.
Right.
Like, suicide is a huge part of L5R, and of course it's very ritualized and sort of glamorized, I would say, mm-hmm. in L5R, just because it is. But I mean, that's something that, you know what, if you sit down at enough tables with enough people, guess what, it's gonna come up, statistically speaking.
Yeah.
Death in general, I don't know if that's the case to your table, but the game master I played the most L5R with was not the last game master I played with. Death was omnipresent. I mean, your L5R for me was the game which taught me your character can die, and that's okay because you're playing the family or whatever. But for me, it's really part of the game. And that last session I played, one of the players had a big issue with that. And that's fine. I mean, the problem was that I was not maybe open-minded enough towards that person. But yeah, having a character die, that mm-hmm. can be something which is an issue. It's less a question of veil line and X card. It's more a question of session zero. But
right.
that's a sort of
question 20,
which is a problem.
Question 20, yeah. Yeah, I can give an example of that if you want. Something that I didn't, like you're saying, the X card is for things that are specifically stuff that you didn't set out with a session zero, you didn't anticipate would be an issue. Last fall, my grandmother, who I was very, very close to, my whole family was close to, died very tragically. And that was something that I eventually sort of digested and processed and worked into Shadow of the Cabal. That's why Shadow of the Cabal has so many fucking badass grandmas everywhere. But yeah, like that was my way of dealing with it. However, if I was a player, imagine I was Bob, who we added to Shadow of the Cabal, and my grandma had just died, and there are all these badass grandma characters, and one of them gets tragically killed. Like, that could push a button that I wasn't anticipating coming up at the table. It's not the GM's fault. It's not my fault. But it's just
I mean, that's the definition of what a trigger is. It's something that elicits an emotion that you might not have been cool with and didn't anticipate. And that is a time where I could conceive myself of saying, hey, you know what? Can we just like move past this and move on with the game? Because this isn't putting me in a good spot right now.
Yeah, it wouldn't have to be the death of the character. Maybe it could be either a random detail, or maybe work with playing with someone who knew your grandmother, and as a tribute included something like she had a white cat or whatever, and just that. I mean, you don't have to. People don't have to justify themselves. It doesn't have to be violent or very big. It can be just one thing which triggers a bad feeling towards a person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dakota, Justin, do you guys have anything that you guys want to add about this topic? I think we've done it justice, or we've talked about it a lot, but if you guys have anything.
Yeah, you guys kind of cleaned it all up.
Sorry.
No, I don't have anything to add.
Okay. All right. So now that we are past that, let's talk about applying this to L5R specifically in a more constructive manner. So what types of things, themes, stories could you take from Crew and Echo as a movie and apply it to L5R either as a game master or a player? Dakota, you are thinking about being a L5R GM pretty soon, on and off, and you're definitely a player now and you're going to be playing more soon. What kind of stuff stood out from you in this movie as either inspiration or otherwise thought-provoking?
So this will be probably a spoiler because it is an adventure that I might run at some point, but the original thought I had regarding the ghosts was that they were going to seek revenge on everyone that wronged them in the house. So I thought it was a point of these women are out for revenge. It's a story of revenge by ghosts, you know, and then they can rest, which might be a more Western approach to ghosts. I'm not quite sure what the Japanese equivalent of, like, what does it take to make a ghost rest?
Well, like, to kind of go into that, I mean, that's like the whole point of the Grudge is, like, that house is haunted and everybody that goes in there is screwed.
Yeah. Right. I think specifically with Kuro and Eiko, at least the way I understood it, is that their end of the bargain, they don't want to move on. They want to drink the blood of samurai forever. So, and that's their reward. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Yeah. No, that's why my initial impression of the ghosts, until they had the line of, we're going to just try and kill all samurai, was, you know, it's a revenge story. It's them enacting vengeance upon those that wronged them. And what I would run is, I'm planning to run a Jade Magistrate game is basically the plan. So the adventure would be that one of these men comes to you and asks for protection because everyone else in this band of samurai have been killed. And do you protect this person? Do you try and put the ghost to rest? You know, what do you do when given this sort of scenario? And how do you approach the story of revenge and vengeance?
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
That would be how I would do it. So.
Yeah. Anybody else want to chime in about applications to L5R? Coloma, I actually don't know. What is your experience with L5R? How much have you played, or how into it are you?
I played for several years in a row a long time ago. And since then, so I was a player, a magistrate, I was a Yoriki to a magistrate of Emerald, played by another player. The last sessions we played were set in Ryoko Owari, so it was the official campaign when you find the notebook from the previous magistrate. I really enjoyed it, but it was a very demanding game.
Yeah, it is.
I'm starting to consider game mastering it someday, but and my problem, as I mentioned earlier, is that since then I played with two different game masters, and I sort of have a Stockholm syndrome, because my my original game master, he was very, very tough in all the games he ran. I mean, I left some games of Star Wars, D6, West End games with him, saying, look, I'm sorry, man. I came here to play a smuggler, not to have creditors and shitty jobs.
Sounds like a fun guy.
But he was an excellent game master, and he was the best for stuff like later Game of Thrones and Song of Ice and Fire and Legend of the Five Rings. But since then, now when I played with other game master, I tended to find them to be a bit too lenient. It was a bit too easy to get your rank 2. Why rank 2 in my first impression was, if you get rank 2, it's like you get level 20 in Dungeons and Dragons. So yeah, I'm kind of learning that yeah, people can have different approach to a same game. And the last one, again, we had this argument with this other player where I was hellbent, like, no, if a character dies, he dies. And the game master was on the fence with that. And it's fine. And I was not, seize the occasion to apologize to Julie for being mean to her character. Yeah. Again, it's, in my game also, we were very, not proactive, but we could be very PvP against each other. So we not stupid PvP, but PvP nonetheless.
Antagonistic.
Yeah. I think L5R is one of the few games that can actually support that decently from like, because like in L5R, there's a way to settle grievances with violence between the two of you, and then it's okay afterwards, which is dueling. Like, yeah, that's a little bit aside.
I'm just going to explain my character with that game master, Stefan, his name was. And my character was a Bushi from the Dragon Clan, Mirumoto, but his mother was Nisezumi for some reason. And just to explain, the way it was that he had a special, so spoiler alert if you are hiding or you want to know about tattoos from the Izezumi, but my character had a scorpion tattoo, and he was a Yoriki for Magistrate of Emerald in Ryokowari. The concept of the tattoo, it was giving me a crazy advantage against anyone in dual situations. But the cost of that was that nobody ever would trust me. So all the characters, all the players at the instruction, every time he speaks, you cannot fail him. You cannot point at him in a court and say, this guy is lying or whatever, because I had the sincerity, etc. But you have this feeling that he's not being straightforward, or he's mocking you, or you don't trust that person. I love that character.
That sounds like an awesome character. Yeah,
that's a cool character.
Yeah, but it's a character you cannot play in any other game than Legend of the Five Rings. Because if you don't have the link of the oath, the fact that the Yoriki was told, this is the people serving you and you have to care for him and he's supposed to care for you. In any other game, including something very PvP like Game of Thrones, my character would get stabbed or just left on the road and people would leave him. But in Legend of the Five Rings, you can play that because people are linked to each other and they got to stick with each other because of oath they have taken. And that's a nice segue to speak of oath in Kurenoko, because
we got a little off topic. It's cool.
There's the oath of the women to the demon, which turns them into yokais. And then there's the oath of Jintoki to his master to kill. And as you said, it's interesting that your duty versus your personal feelings, what's happening. That's a very nice dynamic and something typical of Legend of Five Rings, I think.
Justin, what's up? How's it going?
I would happily just lift this entire movie and put it into the 5R.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's a good elf. Like, it's a good like a magistrate story, kind of. Is there any like insight that you would have specifically as like a GM or a player about that?
Not like,
you just think it's all good?
I think it's all good.
All right. That's a valid opinion. I agree. This is like of the samurai. I mean, this isn't really like a samurai movie. It kind of is, but like of the old Japanese movies I've seen, this and Rashomon are like the two most L5R movies, I think. Like, this could totally just be an L5R story.
So I was looking at the wiki. Apparently, the story this is based on is also the story that Rashomon is based on.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
Oh.
So they share like a similar common base.
Yeah.
According to Wikipedia.
According to Lord Wikipedia. Ryan, what you got?
We need you to cite your sources better, Decatur. All
right, let me look at the Wikipedia and I'll cite that source.
I really liked the scene where after he had reported that he killed the first ghost, the Raiko told him to kill the second one, and he basically begged to have anybody else go do it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that really, really feels...
Feels like Usagi being a sad sack of shit.
Hey. He is a good boy.
He's doing his best.
Yeah. And he usually doesn't beg to get out of things.
Yeah. I really like this movie from an L5R perspective. I think it has good glimpses into like what court life is like. With like the courtiers, and there's a great moment where he's like, all those courtiers there singing songs and perfuming themselves and writing poems while we go out in the mud and kill and rule for samurai. I'm like, yeah, that sounds like something a lion would say, you know? Yeah. I specifically think that this movie is like, I said this to the guys off mic before when we decided to watch it, but this is like the Kolat movie to me. It's fundamentally about peasants, common folk, who were wronged by samurai and were thrust into situations by samurai. Both Gintoki, he was a peasant who was thrust into a situation by a samurai that ruined his life in having to kill his ghost family. And the two women who were raped and murdered by samurai on a warpath. And that is... Like, these are people who are prime for Kolat recruitment, in my eyes.
You would find you really need to check on Ibaba because it's much more Kolat even than...
Awesome.
Don't encourage him. I already have to deal with this enough.
Watching Onibaba.
Yeah, Onibaba's next. And I think specifically, like, some of the stuff that Raiko says is just like, I should have been taking notes and, like, I can just have my next villain. Don't roll your eyes at me about this, Dakota. This is a good talking point.
I expected you to have already... based an NPC off this man.
Yeah, that's fair. But yeah, I mean, like, he basically outlines, he's just like, you know what, samurai rule the world and we're good for everybody, and there's a little bit of a are you guys the best for everybody? And he's like, if we're not good for you, you're weak.
Yep.
It's like, oh great, okay. Yeah, he's a hard ass. He's a little bit of a cartoonish Kolat villain, I think, but I think that he is a good archetype. If you're going to run L5R and you don't want to have a whole Kolat campaign, but you want to have like one story or one adventure about it, look at this dude, rip off Raiko and just drop him in your game and it will write itself. Yeah. Is there anything else that you guys wanted to bring up about L5R?
I think there's a lot. It's normal. It's a Japanese samurai movie, but there's a lot of there's so many tidbits which are very L5R. I like when he killed the first ghost. He goes find his master and say, "Well, I killed the ghost." And it's like, got a proof? Okay, roll for sincerity.
There's a lot of that stuff.
All the idea of hospitality. So all the scenes mm-hmm. with the ghosts, you go there, you're the guest, or you find someone at night, you've got this kind of duty and honor to escort her to her place, and then she welcomes to her place, and this hospitality, the exchange of sake, there's the scene also. I think that's that scene when he tells his story that he killed the, I'm not sure at which moment, but there's a scene where Ryoka makes Gintoki drink sake, so he has it served, and he's got
take my cup, and then yeah.
It's really interesting that whole sort of like feudal hospitality thing is definitely. I would go as far as to say it is a core element of this movie and how the things that happen end up happening.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Cool. Is there anything else that we want to talk about on this movie before we do the old sign off? Guess not. Kalum, I made a mistake and I did not allow you to plug your show at the top. So why don't you go ahead and tell us about the Release podcast and what you guys are up to with that?
So just like Shadows of the Cabal, the Release podcast is a proud member of the RPG Academy network, which is a big sign of quality. We only have excellent shows.
Mm-hmm.
So unlike Shadow of the Cabal, though, the Release podcast is slightly more of a discussion show than it is an actual play show. But we do include some actual play sometimes. The Release podcast, it's about London. It's about role players. It's not concentrating on one game or the hobby of role-playing games. It's outward looking. So how does food or Japanese culture or French culture relate to role-playing games? It's about travel. Well, when I happen to travel, interviewing role players in a shop in Italy or in Denmark or in Washington, D.C. and asking them what's tabletop RPG for them. And some episodes are dedicated to specific French games, so you would have a little bit of actual play and a discussion about the game intertwined together. So I recommend episode 20 about a game called Nephilim, which is a personal favorite of mine. And mm-hmm. The latest episode is I got drunk with a game designer at my home. We played his game, Baron Munchausen. The guest was James Wallace, and again, intertwine actual play of this game with music, with a discussion about the career of that game designer and publisher, and a lot of stories and a lot of revelations about British prime ministers and role-playing games and other personalities of role-playing game. So it's a bit all over the place. That's
awesome. Yeah, it's a great... I can just say from what I've listened to of it, it is a great insight specifically to like the European role-playing scene, which is something that as a good old boy from the Midwest of America, I don't really have much exposure to, but it's awesome. The best way I'd describe it is almost like RPG tourism for me as an American to be able to listen to and get a sense of, you know, the other cultures and how it relates to role-playing. It's an awesome show.
It's getting out there.
Where can we find your podcast at?
Sorry?
Where can we find your podcast at?
You can find it on any decent platform, Podchaser, iTunes, Podbean, via pretty much any podcasting app. So it's Rollist, the Rollist with an S, so R-O-L-I-S-T-E-S. That's the French word for role player. And I'm on iTunes at Rollist Pod. I'm on WordPress. I'm on Facebook. Even Instagram, you can
we'll
see,
be sure.
You can enhance your touristic role-playing experience by seeing pictures of London and other places on my Instagram feed.
Awesome. I will be sure to, of course, link all over the place in the description for this episode. So if you liked Kalum and you want to hear more of him and the premise of his show sounds cool and you want to support more RPG Academy shows, you can definitely check that out and we'll have links for you there. Just want to remind everybody that the reason that we can do this podcast is because of our Patreon backers. If you go to patreon.com/SOTCpod for Shadow of the Cabal, you can kick us a couple of bucks a month. If this is the type of show, either the main feed or these types of shows are the type of thing that you look forward to every week or other week or every month, kick us a couple bucks and it means that we can afford to dedicate time and money and effort to set aside our resources to do stuff like this and talk about cool movies with one another. So check that out at patreon.com/SOTCpod. And Kalum, Rollist has a Patreon as well, doesn't it?
Yes, we do. Which I use to do more stuff. One of the most recent goals we achieved was for me to go to a big UK convention called the UK Games Expo, and we've got different goals for me to travel specifically for the podcast, to meet designers in continental Europe, and also further down the line, maybe travel to the US, maybe come to Acadecon, for instance. That would be nice. or to have game designers come visit me, pay. I call that the bed and breakfast Patreon goal. If I reach this one, I will have game designers come here in London. I will pay for their hotel, pay for their food, and I record an interview with them. And they can come to another convention, Dragon Meet, here in London. Speaking of Dragon Meet, big plug, the Podcast Zone is something we are holding at the Dragon Meet convention on December 2nd here in London. And it's going to have this year 25 different podcasts, Twitch, and YouTube channel dedicated to tabletop RPG banding together to record there. And you can record there with us too if you're visiting the convention. We will interview you, or you can join actual place, which will be recorded, and they're going to be across those 25 shows. So December 2nd, if you're in London or you are considering traveling to here, I really recommend you join us there.
I know for a fact that we have several listeners of the show who are in London or are in the UK and in the area. So I can absolutely recommend that if you're in the area, go check that out. We are going to be at a Catacon. The rest of us, besides Kaloma, I'm sorry, but we're all going to be at a Catacon running games. I'm going to be running two games. I'm going to be running Legend of the Five Rings, and I'm going to be running Phoenix Dawn Command. The slots for those games are going live in a couple of hours. I don't know how fast they're going to fill up, but if they are or aren't, you know, go check that out,
Tanner,
and see what
do you think I'm going to cut this in like an hour?
No, but I think you could do it before November 11th, for God's sakes.
I just one thing to add about
the 12th.
One thing to add about Acadecon to listeners, please go buy Michael's badges, because I'm so tired of him saying all the badges. So if someone could go there and just buy all the badges, so we don't have the post on the Slack like, I got 29, 27, oh, it's back to
19.5.
It's sick.
Just how do you get half a badge?
Please help Michael. Please buy his badges. No, we're going to be there. It's going to be.
It is a
we're all going to be.
I've been several years now. This is not going to be my first year. I've been a few times. It really is a fun time. So,
awesome.
Go.
Yeah.
So we are all looking for all of them.
Buy the badges, please, for our sanity.
Support the RPG Academy.
Love yep. You, yeah. Michael. Check out the RPG. Yeah, he's on Twitter at the RPG Academy. We are proud members of the RPG Academy podcast. We are having it fun, so we are doing it right. And next month, we are going to try to do another movie commentary. We haven't quite decided on it. I think The Last Samurai was brought up jokingly, but we'll see how jokingly that gets.
I was not joking when I brought that up.
Oh, Lord.
It does not joke.
Now Onibaba is on my radar, too, so we might do that.
You might want to have something different. It's a, maybe
yeah, we'll watch like Kung Pao in between that and now to just
will
really
we?
No, we won't watch Kung Pao. Oh. Not on this show. But yeah, we haven't decided next month. It's going to be a little bit it's going to be a little bit hairy to record around a Catacon, scheduling between that and actual Shadow of the Cabal recording. So just follow us on Twitter at SOTCpod, and as soon as we know what we're doing and have a plan for it, we will put that up so that you can watch along beforehand and then listen to the show.
I got a suggestion. You should watch a French movie. You should watch Crying Freeman.
Crying Freeman?
It's contemporary, but it's in the world of Yakuza, so it's kind of...
Ooh. We haven't done a Yakuza movie yet.
So
yeah.
Crying Freeman, so it was based on a manga, but by a French director, when it was all the rage in the late 90s in France and Belgium. Huh?
Hell yeah. Okay, that one's on my radar now, too.
I'm not saying it's good.
Okay, hey. I googled a picture of this. All right, I just googled it, and the image results are pretty hilarious.
So we will...
Oh, boy.
Yeah, we will have to take a look at that, and... wow. Where did we get this pic of Kitsuki? Oh, my God. Dude, his dragon tattoo has a gun.
Does it? It has a knife in the picture I'm looking at.
Shit,
oh, yeah, there's
a gun. Fuck. Okay, we're canceling the show. We're going to watch Crying Freeman for the rest of time.
No,
so.
We're,
thanks for listening.
We're converting Shadow of the Cabal to the Crying Freeman RPG.
Yep, we are. We're going to have to write it first. But thanks so much for tuning in, everybody. You left us with that parting gift. Check out the description of the show for all your requisite links, and thanks so much for listening. Thanks to the Patreons for funding it, and we hope you all have a pleasant evening.
Bye, everyone.
Alrighty.
Bye.
Bye.